When we put this article up, we started driving traffic to it. And because people were going from the article to the product page, and it wasn't like these people were just subscribing because they were tricked. These people were actually buying a variety pack, and then they were coming back and buying the product again. And out basically, you know, 2-3 months later, our subscription rate was 50%. So half of our revenue was coming from subscription. As much as the product does, you really have to feed people with a story of a why and when to consume and how often to consume. Basically, like, give them the outline of how they should be using and consuming the product, but also like why, and remind them, you know, the benefits of the product and what it does for them, etc. This is Limited Supply, the place for refreshingly real takes on what D2C is really like.
We're your hosts, Nick and Moyes. Let's start talking about money.
Hey Moyes, a couple weeks ago, I saw this company ProMix launched a protein-packed Rice Krispie treat. I don't know if you've heard of them, but the coolest part was after I purchased, I immediately got an email from Postscript Cash Back, and it gave me $15 of cash that I could redeem on my next purchase, which I used as soon as my first box of bars ran out. Have you seen this before?
Yeah, it's Postscript Cash Back. It's a new product for them. It's amazing. Postscript is really known for SMS, but this cashback product actually increases email and SMS signups by 31%. It increases contribution margin by 5%. It's going to be huge for Postscript.
That's amazing. If you want to see a demo and see how the product works, visit postscript.io/limited. That's postscript.io/limited.
Okay, Nick, we're here with episode of 10 of this season. Super excited. You're in Los Angeles. You were doing a bunch of other stuff. You're doing a bunch of traveling over the last week. Curious to hear how that's going and you know, what you've got on the agenda for us today.
So yeah, I have been traveling. I took my first vacation after about 7 years, which was pretty exciting. One full week unplugged. I woke up.
That's awesome.
I drank juices. I stared at the water. I went scuba diving, drove some ATVs, took a helicopter, and went ziplining. So it was a good time.
Wow. Wow.
Very relaxing, yeah. And I feel refreshed now.
That's a very Maui vacation. That's a very Hawaii vacation.
It was me and basically everybody who stars in the AARP commercials. We were all just hanging out in Maui.
Hey, those guys know how to
I'm in Vegas. That's right. Now I'm in Vegas, or sorry, not Vegas, Los Angeles, and I'm here for Grow LA, which happens tomorrow. Today's Monday, we're recording. This episode comes out Wednesday. So if you're listening on Wednesday, Grow actually happened yesterday. And for next week's episode, I'll have some cool tips and tricks that I picked up while at Grow. But for today, today I wanted to chat through a couple of things. I wanted to talk about Facebook catalog ads, because they've been working really effectively. And so I want to go deep on catalog ads and sort of talk through a report that I saw come out, as well as just some of my own experience. I want to talk about subscription stoppers, things that stop people from subscribing, and how you get people to get over those stoppers. And then the third thing I want to do is actually sort of interview you and talk about how you drive sell-through in retail and how you manage the retail business, the retail relationships. So I've got some questions here that I want to ask you. And then we'll close out the episode, and next week we'll talk about Grow. Does that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds great. If we have time, I'd love to talk a little bit about Klaviyo. They just provided 2023 results. And if we have a little bit of time, I'd love to discuss the Thrasio bankruptcy as well. But let's start with Facebook catalog ads.
Okay. So for those who are listening, you may be wondering, what are catalog ads? If you remember back in the day, you'd travel on an airline, you reach behind your seat, or the seat in front of you rather, and you pick up a magazine called SkyMall, and you basically look through SkyMall, and that is essentially what Facebook catalog ads are. It's just a massive catalog, and you've got all these ads in between for different products that people can double click into and see. You know, you go directly to the product page, but catalog ads are essentially the opposite of UGC. They're ads that fully look like ads. And I'll get to it in a minute as to why, but this is the reason why they work so well. They're kind of like that Amazon section that says you might also like, but these are strictly ads. It is also the former version of ASC and DABA, which stands for Dynamic Audience Broad Targeting. If you were on Facebook, you know, probably 5, 6, 7 years ago. But Meta's heavily investing into ASC, and based on all of that data that they have, as well as the data that I'll share from this Verus report, it looks like catalog ads are working really well. So before we get into this, I just want to quickly address who DPA, which stands for Dynamic Product Ads, aka Catalog Ads, who they're great for. And I'm curious what you think, but I think they're great for apparel brands, beauty brands, basically any sort of e-commerce brand that has tons of SKUs, but also great for marketplaces, places like StubHub, travel sites, GoPuff, et cetera. Anything you'd add to that?
Yeah, I think it's great for anyone who has a big catalog. Like, I think you're right about all of those. And that's probably what comes to my mind at first as well, which is companies that have a huge catalog. So think Thrive Market, think True Class. Like, you know, anybody who's got, you know, if you're selling one, if you're Athletic Greens, probably not a good use, although I could be wrong. If you're Thrive Market, it makes a ton of sense. And, you know, as I remember in like a decade ago or, you know, 5 years ago, the reason that everyone used these was because you could retarget exactly what the person looked at. So you could be like, okay, you looked at, you know, this pair of joggers, you looked at this shirt, you looked at these shoes in this color, we're going to retarget you with that exact thing. But then we might do like four other colors. So you looked at like Adam's shoes in black and white. Okay, here's what you looked at, but here's four more cards of like the different colors in case like this cat, like, you know, by showing you the catalog, we're hoping you get excited about that product again.
And they used to actually let you put a cover on your gallery. I don't know if they still do that. Last time I checked, I don't think I saw the option, but that used to also be another option. So spend level wise, I think brands, obviously, that have a big catalog, they're spending a good amount of money. However, I do have a couple friends who just recently started an apparel business. They've been able to use catalog ads pretty much fresh off the ground and seen good success with it. So I think it scales up and down. Across 3,500 ad accounts, which is what this report covered, catalog ads saw 78% better ROAS on average. And so I'm excited to get into this report. So let me just pull this up. This report basically looks at, so just context, it looks at $4 billion in Meta ad spend across 3,500 e-commerce brands and basically looks specifically at catalog ads. So that you have video ads and static ads, which are obviously talked about a ton because they look gorgeous and you can quickly throw them up and test and see which ones are best. But the ones that don't get talked about much are the catalog ads, because essentially all you do is just connect your product catalog, throw some copy in there, and that's really one of your only variables with catalog ads as it is, and then you basically let Facebook choose who to serve it to. Most catalog ads, kind of like what you said, you mentioned is for retargeting, but catalog ads now actually do really well in prospecting also. If you just look at ROAS between catalog ads and other types of ads, catalog ads significantly outperform by about 78%. But I will say the caveat to that I think is not added here is catalog ads generally perform well when the brands have really good brand awareness. So if you're a brand that has good brand awareness, gets a good amount of organic traffic, you know, is pretty much showing up in the cultural zeitgeist, catalog ads can perform really well. At the same time, if you don't have any sort of awareness or top of funnel, you can't just rely on catalog ads as your Hail Mary. Catalog ads also have a really good CTR. So, you know, on this, across this report, the average CTR for a video or image ad was 0.86%, whereas a catalog ad CTR was 1.17%, while the CPM actually stays the same. Have you seen this sort of thing with any of the brands that you're overseeing that are running catalog ads?
I'm a little bit skeptical of the numbers. You're getting them from Veros, is that correct?
Correct.
And will you just tell everyone what Veros is so that, like, you know, I know what it is, but will you just mention it? Yeah.
For sure. So Veros is essentially a tool where you can plug in your ad accounts and basically see how your industry or the market in general is doing as it relates to performance marketing. So you can see, you know, are my CPMs completely out of whack? Is it just me? Is it that because I'm targeting, you know, because I'm a beauty brand, all beauty brands are seeing higher CPMs today?
Yeah.
So it sort of gives you a good read and gut check on how you're doing versus the competition or, you know, basically the market.
I've been under the impression that average Facebook click-through rates are much higher than that, closer to 2% than 0.8%. So I'm surprised that you've got their reading is under 1%. Pinterest, which is like the worst ad platform I've ever seen in my entire life, it feels like no one's updated it in, you know, since the dinosaurs walked the earth. I think their click-through rate is 0.25%. And so I'd be surprised if Facebook's was only 4x that. I think it's far more than that. Also, with catalog ads, I believe the ROAS is higher. it's clear to me that that would be the case, but I think that that's the case because it's primarily used for retargeting. Like, I think it's primarily used for people who are like, I landed on this product, let me show that product again. That's how it was 5 years ago. I can't imagine if you're Jones Road Beauty, you're like, let me run a catalog ad for prospecting. Because people like, you know, a catalog ad is generally products, right? Like photos of products. And so people are like, you know, you can't learn about a brand with a photo of a product. You got to learn about a brand with, you know, that classic landing page strategy that you tell me about, which is like social proof, you know, high quality images, all that kind of stuff. So I think it's primarily used for retargeting, but, you know, I haven't used catalog ads in a long time, so I'm not entirely sure.
Have you ever used enriched catalogs?
No. What's enriched catalogs? No.
So typically, like a catalog ad is essentially what you said, right? You you connect your product feed, and basically it pulls the image from your product page. It's usually white background with a shirt or a shoe on top. And the way this works is like Facebook just dynamically pulls this from a feed, which is usually connected in directly into Facebook, or you might use an Excel sheet, upload an Excel sheet, which has all the assets, the links, etc. And that's how it pulls and then serves the ads. Enriched catalogs is cool because it allows you to alter the content of the creative. So instead of just pulling a plain background with a black t-shirt in front of it, you can actually create a template. And this is done through a software called Marpipe, but you can basically create this template where you have the shirt still, but the background is now bright orange. It has a placeholder for the title of the product to go on top. The bottom right, you can have the price placeholder. The bottom left, you could have a call out whether, you know, if the product in the catalog is marked as sale or under $50, you can have a rule like, hey, if it's on sale, add the sale sticker. If it's under $50, you can write, you know, get this thing. If it's over $50, you can write free shipping as a badge that pops up automatically. Those have worked really, really well on the prospecting side for us. You know, back in the day, like the biggest variable we had in catalog ads was just the copy, right? You could sort of change the headline of the ad, but you really want that to just be the product name of the product. And then the copy on top was really what you had as your variable to change and test different versions. Really of just copy. But now you essentially have these two variables. You have the entire graphic, which can be fully altered and templatized with Marpipe, and you have the copy.
Are you an investor in Marpipe? I've never used them. I've never heard of them, actually.
I'm not affiliated at all.
And you know, when I used to run catalog ads, all it was like, I remember trying to do it with like native. We'd put in a woman with, you know, using native. We'd put it in like, you know, next to all these ingredients that people would love. And despite spending like thousands of dollars and maybe even tens of thousands, I'm sure tens of thousands of dollars on that photography, a white photoshopped image still worked better. In this instance, now you're saying basically, hey, look, Marpipe is going to increase your click-through rate here.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. I'm looking at their site. Okay. Pretty cool. Yeah. Okay. Used by real stores too, huh? Revolve, Ridge.
I don't know if it's actually on their site, like on the homepage, but if you just Google Marpipe enriched catalogs, there's a really cool graphic that I think pops up where you could see the before and after of, you know, basically like a plain product image. And then as it goes through this template that you can set up.
Okay. So you're shifting everybody, or you're talking about basically catalog ads when you're talking to your clients these days.
Yeah, they seem to work really well, and they pair really well with the ASC or essentially the new engine that Facebook is using to push ads.
Yeah, you know, over the past couple of weeks, I've seen a bunch of people like not happy with Facebook ads on Twitter. Have you noticed that? Like a lot of people, or were you on vacation so you didn't see it?
No, that's the problem. If you're on vacation and there's a problem with Facebook ads, your phone still gets blown up. Yeah, we had a few accounts that were seeing super inflated CPMs. We also had a couple accounts where the spending for periods of the day would completely stop. Like, you know, from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m., there's $0 spent. But then from 9 to 12, it spends that entire daily budget really inefficiently. I mean, Facebook did, I think, at the end of last week say that, hey, something is wrong, even though that was an announcement made, you know, 10 days too late. But there hasn't been any fix made yet. And I don't think there's been a fix pushed because there's still a lot of these issues happening. Are you seeing the same thing?
I haven't been seeing the same thing. I'm sure I'm looking at far fewer accounts than you are, though. And there were enough people on Twitter where I was like, okay, something must be going on. I just haven't seen it. It's crazy that, like, you know, some of their issues affect the entire universe of advertisers, and some of their issues are limited to fewer advertisers. And it's always like, you know, I looked at a couple ad accounts that I look at pretty frequently to also see on the billing. I'd be like, are there any like refunds or credits given? And it's something like 43 cents or like, you know, 19 cents. So I was like, okay, this is the classic. I don't even know how they come up with that number. I'm like, they're like, oh, we overcharge you.
They
this
just pull it out of a
like,
hat.
19 cents. I was like, this guy spends $2 million a month and somehow you got 19 cents incorrect. Like, was it one ad for 1 second that you showed incorrectly and you're giving me a refund for? But hey, it's 19 cents, so why not take it?
It's actually what they do is they make interns line up in Menlo Park and then they have a hat full of pennies, and however many pennies the intern can grab, they can drop it over an advertiser and that's what your refund is.
Okay, all the interns that choose me have really small hands because they've never grabbed more than a few dozen pennies, really.
You know what they say about small hands?
Yeah. I love starting our podcast with Facebook ad advice because everyone listening is like, okay, that's the advice that I need. You know, like, that's so important.
Yeah.
Can I switch to Klaviyo for a second and then we'll head back? So one is Klaviyo just announced the results for the year of 2023. They just IPO'd, you know, last year. So they haven't been a public company for a really long time, but I was curious to see, you know, their stock is down quite a bit since they IPO'd. Not quite a bit, but like, you know, at least 10% since they IPO'd and the market's up. So I was like, what's going on here and what's happening? And so these are the results they announced. They said they had about 130,000 customers at June 30th, 2023. By December 31st, 2023, 6 months later, they had 143,000 customers. So about a 10% increase in customers over the last 6 months. Here's where some more interesting information. At the end of 2022, so December 31st, 2022, they had 1,000 customers paying more than $50,000 per year. So 1,000 people were paying more than $50,000, which to me is shocking because, like, how many of those 1,000 people can you name off the top of your head? Hexclad, Ridge, you know, Broom, you know, Native, guys with a 1 million-person email list are paying way over $50,000 ARRs, probably paying over $100,000 ARRs. And so it blows my mind that there's only 1,000 of them. I feel like I know 500 of them. Like, I email with 500 of them. So that was surprising that there were 1,000 at the end of December 31st, 2022. The end of December 31st, 2023, so, you know, 3 months ago at this point or 2 months ago, they had 1,958 or 2,000 customers generating 50,000 or more. They basically doubled the number of customers that pay $50,000 a year or more to Klaviyo. They had $700 million in revenue in 2023, which is a lot. I mean, $700 million, it's nothing to sneeze at. And then, like, you know, the profit is always a little, like, what's their profit? People will always be like, how much profit do you have? And it's a little bit hard to determine because you have stock-based compensation. So you'll say, okay, let's say I gave this person 1% of the company. I hired a new COO and he gets 1% of the company or 0.21% of the company. That's going to hurt your EBITDA, even though that's like non-cash expenses. I tried to add back all of their stock-based compensation. So on $700 million in revenue, they had $10 million in profit. I think I'm doing the math right there. Not entirely sure, but I think I'm doing the math right there. $10 million in profit on $700 million in revenue. A couple crazy parts were $300 million in marketing expenses, which really blows my mind because I'm like, where are they spending $300 million?
Yeah, I don't even know how you'd spend $300 million in B2B marketing.
Yeah. I don't know how they did that. $140 million in R&D, like research and development. Now, that includes salaries. Both of these people, like both of this includes salaries, but doesn't include stock-based comp because I think I tried to eliminate that. So that's still a lot. Wow. A couple other interesting facts that I thought were 31% of revenue comes from outside the United States.
No way.
I thought that was really surprising. High. Yeah. It is much higher than I suspected. And I think earlier today, I saw this on Twitter again, so I don't have firsthand information. Earlier today, they announced that they're going to make it so that, like, they're going to create a partner solution for brands. Like, they're going to try and manage emails for brands now. Like, I think they're...
Oh, that's going to be terribly done.
Yeah. And, like, you know, they email their partner agencies and they're like, hey, we want you to know that we're partners with you first, but now we're also competitors with you. Not in so many words, but basically like that. They're like, now we're also competitors with you.
PostScript and Attentive both do something similar. Like they have a service where internally you could essentially hire them to do it. Have you ever used either of them?
Yeah. Native did that with PostScript and it was phenomenal. I was like, build our flows. And they're like, we looked at your email flows and we're going to make it a great flow here. And let me caution everyone by saying I'm an investor in PostScript, but we use them at Native and it was phenomenal.
I've had a few portfolio companies do it with SMS and it worked well. I wonder though, with email, because email is so much more complex, there's also a much higher frequency of sending out emails than there is with SMS. And you have to design graph, you know, you have to deal with creative, which opens up a whole other can of worms in terms of, you know, is this on brand? Is this off brand? If they're doing this internally, that's going to be essentially a low margin operating piece of business in my, that's how I would see it. And it would be pretty people intensive for, I think, the reward they would get from it.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me either. Like, you know, if you're a software business, you should be a software business and be a good software business, not like, let's start competing with our partners. I think I would not have said that in the last nine years, but like, you know, every business I've started in the last 9 years or sort of been associated with has used Klaviyo. Today is the first day where I, like, you know, not today, but like probably the last couple months are the first time I've ever thought, okay, Klaviyo may not be the right solution if you're a new business. If you're an existing business, you know, I still think, and you're on Klaviyo, I think the lift to like change is so huge. Like having to recreate every flow and understand the, like, you know, what other people have done in the past. Like right now, Nick, if you go to Native, it probably knows that you purchased 3 years ago. It knows that you like full body, you know, it knows so much about you. Like to try and replicate that today, if you're an existing business, is probably a huge lift and probably not worth your time. Or the cost savings, just because it doesn't make sense. If you're a new business, I think it might make sense to start with this. And I'm not an investor in Sendlane. I think it might make sense to start with the Sendlanes of the world as opposed to Klaviyo, just because I think that the cost, the maniacal focus on e-commerce are really important. And I think Klaviyo's already lost. I don't think Klaviyo's like, you know, has that maniacal focus on e-commerce anymore. You know, they're creating managed agencies. They're trying to create Klaviyo for like wellness businesses. Like if you're a boutique spa or a boutique fitness studio, they're trying to create Klaviyo for you.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it's called Klaviyo for Wellness, I think. Like that's their new segment that they've launched. And so they're like, you know, they're no longer e-commerce anymore.
Yeah. So it's basically just for wellness specific businesses. Is this just their Klaviyo LA office?
Yeah. Imagine if you're like a small boutique spa, right? That gives massages and like, you know, you probably have no mechanism for being like, I need to follow up with Nick because he really likes to get massages every Sunday before he starts work. And, you know, I should send him an email and he hasn't showed up for 3 Sundays. So I need to send him a discount to make sure that he doesn't churn. So I think it is interesting and sort of makes sense for them. The problem is, as e-commerce entrepreneurs, we got that attention from Klaviyo before. And now, like a bad parent, that attention is being split across us and, you know, the new children that they've got. And so, you know, e-commerce is not the focus of Klaviyo any longer. Or like e-commerce is not the singular focus. And I think that makes options like Sendlane, and I'm not an investor in Sendlane. I have no equity, no advisor, not one share, not $1. But I think it does make Sendlane more interesting to people. The one thing I don't understand is like, what does Klaviyo do in terms to help ensure deliverability that other people might not do? Like the front end and the back end I got, like those features are pretty understandable, but like, you know, does Klaviyo do anything to ensure that like, you know, your suppressed emails don't, like, you know, someone marks an email as spam 3 times, you never email them again. Is there any software automation there that Klaviyo does specifically that most people aren't aware of, where if you switch from Klaviyo to somebody else, you would actually like hurt your open rate in a way? That's what I don't understand. That's a little bit of a black box to me. But other than that, I think that alternatives to Klaviyo make a ton of sense these days.
That was the only thing that, as you were talking, went through my mind is like, does Klaviyo have something in their tech or in their setup that would enable you to get better deliverability or get more out of the same thing? And I don't know what the answer is. I do know, and I could try to do some research before the next episode. I do know that Sendlane has something pretty proprietary, and I don't know the technical in and outs, but I can learn more about it and bring it back. But I do know that they're fairly vertically integrated, which is what had taken them, I think, 2 or 3 years to build. And that was a huge advantage for him. I completely agree. I mean, I think Klaviyo is also very expensive, so it's hard to make it something where, you know, if you're starting a business and you're bootstrapped and you're looking to get your email set up, you know, Klaviyo is not the cheapest option to start with. And yeah, I'm curious to see even, you know, a year from now, what that split looks like between people who are staying on Klaviyo and people who have migrated elsewhere. Typically, when there's new players that come in, the migrations definitely happen, you know, within the first year or so. And so I'm curious to see how Sendlane starts to eat some of that lunch.
Yeah, I think that'll happen as well, because Klaviyo's gotten insanely expensive, and their price, like their pricing isn't just based on how many emails you send. It's also based on like how many profiles you have. So Nick, if you signed up for native with three different email addresses, now it's three different profiles. And like, even if two of those profiles are like suppressed and don't ever get emails or never open an email or anything, like, you know, even if they're suppressed, it still costs me money to send you an email. Or like, it still costs me money, not even to send you an email, just because you are a profile inside my account. And as a result, like, you know, it's not just a function of, okay, you sent an email, you know, you get 50 million emails and, you know, you can send as many as you want per month. It's you get 50 million emails, even though you're sending 20 million, well, you've got 2 million profiles. And so you got to pay more because you got 2 million profiles. So they're like, you know, they're like, you need to go in and take 600,000 email addresses and basically delete them, which is banana. Like, you know, it's so silly. I'm like, look, I want these profiles here. I want that information saved. And the amount of data this costs you, like the technology costs for this, are fractions of a penny per month, and you're charging me thousands of dollars for them. And it's just, right. It just feels really like the more and more I look into it, the more and more I'm like, Klaviyo is not the solution I wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. Fully agree. There might be a misconception that PostScript is for the small guys in DTC, but the biggest brands on Shopify are using PostScript. Jones Road, True Classic, Mary Ruth's, Ruggable, Portland Leather, Graza, the list goes on and on. PostScript can support any migration, and they can do it quickly and efficiently. They're SMS first all the way, constantly innovating and constantly working on making that channel the top revenue driver for e-com merchants. They offer a lot of product features, but it's important to remember that they are just the goats of SMS. Learn more at postscript.io/limited.
Okay, let's move on. What was the next thing that you had on your list? I'm sorry, I've forgotten now.
One thing I wanted to go through and talk about is subscription. I call them subscription stoppers. So basically, things that hinder people from going forward and subscribing to something. And I wanted to start by saying, when I joined the company Hintwater, I think our subscription rate was something around 15%. So 15% of our D2C revenue was subscription-based. After we ran that Sweetie article, do you remember the Sweetie advertorial that we ran?
Yes.
It was basically a founding story. I'd paid the hustle to write a founding story of Hint, we put it up, and we started driving a ton of traffic.
How much did you pay for the story? Do you remember?
Initially, I offered 10% of affiliate sales. I think they would have made something like $1.2 million, but we ended up paying $5,000 flat. And I had to work so hard to convince Hint to allow me do that for $5,000, which is funny to think about, knowing how much revenue it ended up driving for us. But we paid $5,000. The second time I went back to do the same thing, we did the deal, $5,000, signed the IO, the article goes up, and then I get a text saying, hey, I want 10% now. And I was like, no, we agreed to $5,000. And then they took the article down so because I didn't give them 10%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it wasn't a great ending to that relationship. So anyway, so when we put this article up, we started driving traffic to it. And because people were going from the article to the product page, we had a 50% take rate of subscription. And it wasn't like these people were just subscribing because they were tricked. These people were actually buying a variety pack, and then they were coming back and buying the product again. And out, basically, you know, 2-3 months later, our subscription rate was 50%. So half of our revenue was coming from subscription. And the biggest insight I had there was that as much as the product does, you really have to feed people with a story of a why and when to consume and how often to consume. Basically, like, give them the outline of how they should be using and consuming the product, but also like why, and remind them, you know, the benefits of the product and what it does for them, et cetera. I think also on the PDP, I put some notes down. I'm curious to see what you would add to this, but, you know, I think making sure you can note the ongoing discount when you subscribe. Obviously, any of the messaging around, you know, cancel anytime, happiness guarantee, things like that. I think another one is making sure that the you note when the order is going to ship and when it's likely to arrive, especially because subscriptions happen in cadences. And so you want to make sure somebody understands, okay, if I'm getting it every 30 days, then that means today, you know, does that 30 days start when it arrives, when it ships, when I place the order? Just making that very clear. On that cadence too, I think one thing that brands do, because you know, you install a subscription app, it's got all these different options for, you know, do you want 50, every 15 days, 30, 45, 60? A lot of brands leave all those options, but typically there's one option that has probably 70%. The next best option has about 20%. And then the last 10% is split between the last two. You should probably just focus on the one that has 70%. Because otherwise you can leave people with analysis paralysis and they might overthink, or they might say, actually, let me go check and then I'll come back and figure this out. You might lose the opportunity there. I also think illustrating the benefits helps. So iconography that helps people understand that this is auto ship, which is a word I like to use instead of just subscribe. You know, an icon that helps them understand they're never going to run out. So if it's something that something like a supplement or something that helps them be better or do better or feel better, you know, telling them that they're not going to have to worry about running out. When we were at Hint, one of the best lines of copy we used was, you know, you don't have to take this from the grocery store to your car back into your kitchen. It just arrives at your front door. Obviously, calling out the dollar saved. And then the other thing I think people should do on their PDP is the reviews that they push should also talk about the benefits of subscription. So the reviews should actually push the fact that, you know, it arrived just on time, or it always arrives just as I'm finishing, so that people see that. I also think it's important when you're, and now this is two subscribers, existing subscribers, you should actually run some ads that are, you know, they could just be video view ads to a targeted list, but something that's cheap, low CPM, and sort of just keeps the brand top of mind. The challenge of retention is really just how do you stay top of mind for people so that when they run out or when they need that, when they have that need to be filled, they think of you. And now going towards the canceling side. So the number one reason that I've seen with consumables that people cancel is really just because they end up with too much product. And that is because, you know, me and you, we sit in our boxers at home and we think, all right, you know, this is a 30-day supply, so I'm going to make this every 30 days. But what we forget is that sometimes people go out and they have a crazy night, and the next morning they don't have their normal morning routine. So they skip their, you know, scoop of Armour or whatever it is. Maybe they travel for a week, and so they don't actually finish the shampoo that's in their bathroom. And now they've got, you know, an extra week's worth of shampoo, and you put that over, you know, 2 months, and now you've got an extra bottle of shampoo. And so I've personally had that issue. You know, I end up with too much product, or, you know, I subscribed to K18 shampoo on Amazon and I ended up with like four extra bottles when I didn't, you know, I was just not going through it much slower. So I think that's another thing that people should be cautious of as to why people are canceling and how to fix that is really just understanding basically the consumption of the product. And then when people do cancel, I do think people should make it very easy to pause or cancel a subscription, but I think you should make it very beneficial back to you. You know, the trade is like, hey, we'll make it easy to cancel it online. You don't have to call us, but have those downsells in place. So if somebody goes to unsubscribe to the shampoo, maybe you say, well, you know, are you sure you want to unsubscribe? Yes. Okay. Well, what if we gave you the next month at 50% off? And then, you know, you make the yes, take the deal button really flashy and nice. But if they still click cancel, you could say, well, what if we make your order completely free for the next period? If they don't take that, then, you know, you let them cancel. If you do make them call, there's a couple companies that do this well where you essentially have to talk to a rep to just cancel. And in one part, I think it's important to ask people and really get to the reason of why they're canceling, because those surveys that people ask are generally not fully accurate. They're probably 30 to 40% accurate, but the other 60 to 70% is just people who want to get off the subscription, you know, close the browser and go outside. Anything you'd add there?
So you took Hint's subscribe and save for, or like, you know, auto ship from 15% of all orders to 50% of all orders, like basically all, like, you know, all new customers. Okay. And how did you go from 15 to 50?
It was that the overall revenue was 50, okay. But not the first order opt-in was 50.
Just to make sure I understand it, 50, like let's say you guys did $1 million a month, $500,000 of that was coming from subscription revenue, including renewals. And $500,000 was coming from one-time purchases. Okay.
Correct. And the main way we did that was we actually figured out the most optimal user journey for our highest LTV customers, which we figured out was first purchase is a sampler. Second purchase is a one-time purchase of a specific flavor in that sampler. And third purchase was a subscription of the favorite flavor.
Was auto ship auto checked or like, you know, checked when you logged on to the PDP or was it no? Okay, gotcha.
And it still isn't today.
What do you think of doing that? Like, you know, I think a lot of brands struggle with, should I automatically default people into subscriptions or not?
The brand marketing side of me is like, no, don't do it. The performance marketing side of me is like, yes, do it. In fact, hide the one-time option.
It's like that meme with the two Kermits, you know, that meme with like a regular Kermit and then the Kermit that looks like a Sith Lord. Do you know?
Do it. Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know. I think it's worth testing. Like, I think you should test it and just understand what happened. You know, you'll have a baseline for customer service tickets, cancellations. I think test it. Just make sure you tag the users that are coming in on subscription as the default option and just understand over the next 6 months, what does that do for their LTV or for cancellations or for customer service tickets? But I think, you know, a couple brands have tried it that I know of and they've had no issues with it. But also there's also been a couple brands that have tried it that, you know, I think it also depends like the demo you're going after. If you're going after a demo that is not super computer savvy or understanding of that, then you have that issue. However, the one thing I will say too is ever since subscriptions became more integrated within Shopify, like Shopify subscription API came out, which was I think last year, you know, that didn't necessarily mean that Shopify was going to run and take over subscriptions, although now they recently did launch a very basic version of subscriptions. But it basically meant that subscriptions was something Shopify understood. And so as you're checking out, you have to actually check a box and confirm that, hey, what I'm purchasing today is a recurring purchase. So that could, you know, it might be worth actually testing default subscription because there is that fail safe in there as well.
I think a few other brands, including like Manscaped and Honest, do that where you have to check a box when you're subscribing saying, hey, okay, I know that I'm signing up for a subscription. I wanted to mention a few things. One is that Honest does this thing where it says, which I really admire, where if you're signing up for a subscription, it'll say subscribe and save, you know, 5% on all shipments. So, because like, you know, a frequent question will be, okay, if I subscribe and save, is the discount applied to this one order or all future orders, which is what you mentioned earlier? And they make the 5% on all shipments in red. So it really sticks out and you're like, oh, okay, if I subscribe and save, I'm actually going to save a lot of money. Or like I'm going to save this 5% on every single package,
every time,
not just the first package. Generally, I think a 5% discount is just not very good or compelling. So I think it has to be a lot higher than that. But at least they do what you said, which is they make it clear that you're saving on every single package. The other thing is, I think, yes, you're right that the number one issue of subscriptions is I've gotten too many. And you're right, the downsells are great. The ability to adjust your frequency is great. We used to do this thing at Native where you could subscribe to our deodorant every month, 2 months, 3 months, or 4 months when you were checking out. But then when you were going to edit your subscription on your My Account page, we let you actually go even longer. You could say, I want it every 6 months. So there are more options after you've tried it, you've got the second package and you're like, okay, I actually don't need this nearly this frequently. I was on every 2 months. Let me go to every 6 months. But we wouldn't like, you know, we wouldn't put all six of those options on the PDP because we knew that it would be confusing if there were too many choices. I'm not sure if that was a good idea or not a good idea. I never tested it, but we did do that. And I thought that was a really good thing to do. The other things are, you know, when you're checking out, like the hard part with subscriptions is that everyone forgets that they subscribed and they blame you. Why am I getting another package? Why am I getting another package? You know, I'm rejecting this credit card charge. Why did you do this? You guys are scammers. And I wish there's like literally nothing you can do to prevent that. And I just want to offer like rant for 2 seconds, which is I could call you, send you a telegram, email you, spray paint your front door saying your subscription to Native is going to renew. And then when it renews, you'd be like, what happened? You didn't even notify me. They'd be like, you didn't even notify me.
How come I didn't know about this?
That's why, you know, one of the things that we've chatted about in the past is I would love for Stripe to create a Yelp for people so that we could be like, okay, these people somehow always seem to miss their notifications that they're on a subscription. Like they subscribe, they get the discount, they change the frequency. We'd be like, look, dude, you change the frequency from every 2 months to every 4 months. And then they'd be like, I thought that's how frequently you're going to email me. And I was like, come on. And then, like, even despite all that, like, I wish Stripe would be like, okay, these people are a list of people that always are doing chargebacks, so you can be much more cautious. And the final thing I wanted to say, which is you're not allowed, at least based in California, if you're based in California or do business in California, you're not allowed to make it so that people have to call you anymore to unsubscribe. If they can purchase online or subscribe online, you're required to make it so that they can unsubscribe online too, which I think is the right thing to do. It's just good for your brand. Like, look, if people don't want subscriptions and you make it difficult for them to unsubscribe, you might gain a couple extra dollars, but overall, there will be a snowball cascade effect of people who hate you and make it like don't want to do business with you. Like, people will Google it and be like, wow, this guy's impossible to do business with. So I think that you should make it so that people can unsubscribe really easily.
The Yelp idea is really interesting. I bet there's a way that, the same way that mobile device IDs get anonymized in ad tech, I bet you could anonymize a customer list and put it into a central database, and brands could opt in to share their database as well as share all of the any issues that happen with that customer. Because right now, Shopify has like a risk analysis, or companies will have this risk analysis that you could see, is this person likely to, is this order risky essentially? And it's usually a factor of the IP address matching the address that they put for their billing, or shipping and billing addresses being in different states, things like that. But there really is no issue for, or no software or solution for things where you just have shitty customers who basically kind of screw you over and then threaten to charge back, or, threaten to hurt your business in a way where you really as the merchant have nothing you can do about it.
I couldn't agree. Yeah.
Is that a smile of violence?
I agree with you entirely. That's a smile of, I've got so many things to say about offline about what you can do about it. But yes, you're right. Like, I would love that. And you're right. That risk analysis is a risk of like, is this credit card being charged by the guy who owns the credit card? It's not a, This customer does 4 chargebacks a year on orders over $80. Like, there's a Reddit subgroup of like how you should charge back Amazon. And they're like, you can probably charge back one purchase and say you didn't receive it every month, or I'm sorry, every year or something, before they like revoke your Prime account. And so people will be like, oh man, I just found the subreddit. I actually didn't receive my deodorant and I charged back. Like, so they gave me a free $13 refund. I should have done it on a $400 item. I should have ordered a TV, received it, and then said, there are people who are doing this as a regular course of business, and somebody needs to police that. And I think Stripe is the perfect person to do it. I'm not sure why they haven't built it yet.
Yeah. The worst part is like you could have the photo of the product sitting at somebody's doorstep and submit that, and the bank will still award the chargeback and screw you over as the merchant.
You could have an affidavit signed by the guy and like, here's Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan Chase. Here's the customer. They're both looking at them. There's a photo of them both looking at your package in the customer's hands, and they charge it back, and you provide it to a Chase chargeback, and the Chase is like, nope, we've sided with the customer. Like, they have every incentive to side with the customer. There's nothing that you can do. It's really, really frustrating as a merchant.
Yeah.
Okay, let's shift gears. And I know we don't have that much time left, so I'd love to talk about the Thrasio bankruptcy for a hot second if you're okay with that. Thrasio just declared bankruptcy. They've raised more than $3 billion over the course of their lifetime. In 2021, I think at some point they said they had raised at a $10 billion valuation, although it turned out that might not have been accurate. In 2021, Thrasio told TechCrunch that the previous year, so in 2020, Thrasio said, we did $500 million at top line and profit of $100 million in 2020. What went so wrong?
I always thought the idea that you could just buy a bunch of business, this is also from the vantage point of working inside an e-commerce business. The fact that you've got marketing, which is, I think, the shiny object in e-commerce businesses, is like the ads, the marketing, the website, the packaging. And that's, I think, where a lot of these investors that were in Thrasio were thinking the advantages are, oh, if we have, one team that's running Facebook ads, then we'll do the same thing for operations. We'll have one guy who's running all our trucking and one guy who's talking to the manufacturers and one guy who's ordering raw materials. But the reality is that, if you're selling drones in one product and then jeans in another and then Tupperwares in another, and you've bought this flower business as your fourth business, like the complexities of each, the problems of each, the skeletons in the closet, the operational challenges, there is just no way that you can consolidate all of this. And I think that was one thing they sort of figured out. The other thing was just people don't want mediocre shit. They don't want tier three brands, you know, sitting on their kitchen counter. I'm sure there's some population, or maybe it's like a Walmart like deal where, you know, if it's a salt and shake, salt and pepper shaker, sure, it doesn't matter what brand you have. But if you've got, you know, beautiful tableware, or if you've got a nice coffee machine, or you're buying a drone, you don't want that fourth tier drone company. You want the best drone company. And so I think those were some of the challenges. I never thought Thrasio was going to work from the very beginning, because I thought it was basically a business built in an Excel sheet and didn't really factor in anything from the real world or the real challenges that businesses have internally. And I guess it finally caught up.
How is that different from OpenStore?
It's not.
Is OpenStore built on a spreadsheet? No, it's not different. Okay.
OpenStore, yeah, I'm not sure. I think OpenStore has been a lot smarter in the acquisitions they've made in trying to make sure that they're consolidating maybe categories. But yeah, I mean, I still think it's the same challenge, right? I think that a company that has done a decent job at it, or actually probably maybe one of the better jobs, is Pattern Brands. One, they're not going out and buying, you know, as many brands as they possibly can. Their goal isn't to spend all their marketing dollars in telling people that they'll get bought, which is what a lot of these companies were doing. They're more just like, hey, we found five or six brands that have pretty much the same customer, and they're all very complementary. And so it worked out for them. They also found their way into retail. But, you know, a company like Thrasio or OpenStore or some of these other aggregators, I think a lot of their goal was just like, how do we tell the most amount of people that will buy them? And that, you know, like I know of a company that I was actually looking at one point. They got bought by an aggregator, and they said it turned into a total shit show because, you know, the supplier that they worked with was in Mexico and they had nobody who spoke Spanish. And then the trucking companies that they wanted to use were different than the ones that the aggregator wanted to use. It just became this operational mess, and they couldn't even get to the point where they had a unified team running their Facebook ads because they couldn't even get the product made on time.
I think you're right about a lot of that. I think the hard part about Thrasio was that they thought businesses were commodities and they were buying EBITDA instead of businesses. And they're just like, whatever 4x EBITDA is, just write that check. You know, a lot of people who sold their businesses to Thrasio that I talked about were like, you know, these guys offered us more than anybody else. And like, you know, they forgot to take out my access to Amazon, and I can see the business is faltering. Like, these businesses were run by people that had no agency costs. They were small mom and pop businesses. Thrasio came in and they're like, look, we think we can run this better with like this guy who has an agency cost. He doesn't care as much as the last guy did, but he's like, you know, running everything through Excel. So he's more sophisticated, and we think that's going to work. And that really didn't work. I think that they didn't care at all about the categories that they were in. They were like, okay, if you're selling spoons, we're interested at 4x EBITDA. If you're selling deodorant, we're interested in 4x EBITDA. We don't care about anything other than the multiple, which I thought was a huge mistake. And, you know, I remember like OpenStore, there's like a relative of OpenStore called Opendoor, which is like a real estate aggregate. Are you familiar with Opendoor?
I don't know much about the business. I know it exists though.
Yeah. Okay. So Opendoor like did what Zillow was doing for a short period of time, which is they would go out and they'd like, you'd say, I want to sell my house. And you'd send them your address and a couple photos of the house, and they'd give you an offer right away. And they'd close within like 5 days or something because it was a cash offer. They didn't need an inspection because they got the photos, and like they'd buy your house. And so that seemed like an interesting idea because, like, you know, you could buy and sell you could sell your house in 5 days. And then what they would do is they'd fix it up a little bit and then try and flip your house. So if you go to Opendoor today, like, you know, there's a lot of houses for sale in San Antonio, Texas, and Phoenix, Arizona, and other cities. I had a friend of mine, a relative of mine, who's a real estate flipper. And he's like, I couldn't believe it. Like, when Opendoor was buying a lot of houses, you would send them photos of your place and they would offer you 20% more than market value. Like a Shopify business, okay, I'm not sure if it's worth 3x or 4x multiple. Like, there's a reasonable debate there. Usually with a real estate that, like, you know, property that's worth $300,000, maybe it's worth 305 or 295. They'd come in and pay 360. And so this guy was like, this relative of mine was like, I cannot believe this. I'm taking these photos. I get this insane offer and I make a fortune, and they write the check. And like, you know, it was VC subsidies of home sales. Which is crazy because it's like the most expensive transaction. And so I feel like that's what Thrasio is doing. They're like, just send us the numbers and we're going to write you a big check. And then when we get inside, we're going to be like, oh, fuck, this is a terrible business, but maybe we'll make it up. And they'd always talk about, like, you know, they're like, we buy the Agent Oranges of the world. And Agent Orange was this business that was doing, like, they bought it at $3 million in top line. And, like, you know, a couple of years later, it was $30 million in top line. And they're like, we see some of these. You know, it turns out that's very much the exception to the rule. Mostly you saw $5 million businesses go to $1 million, I would bet, and not $3 million businesses go to 30. And that's just because, you know, you didn't have the right operators. You thought there's no synergies between these things at all. Warren Buffett, when he buys businesses, he's like, I never expect synergies. Like, I own a trucking company or like a railroad company and a newspaper company. There's no synergies. You can't have common HR. You can't have common finances. You have to run them independently. And I think that's ultimately true with a lot of these Thrasio businesses, probably not all of them, but most of them. And I think at some point, like, reality caught up with them. Also, COVID couldn't have helped. Like, you know, you saw a huge spike in sales. And then probably a huge, like, you know, you prepared for it. You prepare for inventory increases because you're running this on an Excel spreadsheet. COVID goes away. You can't really forecast for that in your Excel spreadsheet. And you're probably left with a ton of inventory. But pretty insane bankruptcy, like $3 billion in debt and equity. For context, Klaviyo's market cap is $7 billion. These guys raised half that in debt and equity, and now it's bankrupt.
So what you're saying is we just need to figure out whatever the next hype cycle is that VCs are very clueless about, and then we need to go fundraise and then go party.
We need to actually make that hype cycle. Not we need to figure out what it is. We create the hype cycle.
Let's create the hype cycle.
You know, what was that? Like, that's a Fire Festival guy. That's what he would do. He creates yeah. hype cycles. He's back for the festival number two now. Yeah, that's right. I feel like you're going to go. You got to go.
I'm not going.
All right. Okay, that's a wrap for episode 10 of this season. This was great. When do you get back to New York?
I get back Thursday night, so maybe we'll film the next episode this coming weekend. And I'm excited to talk with you about driving sell-through in retail, because I think there's a lot of content on the online piece, but there's nothing really about the retail guys, because why would those guys want to give their secrets away as to, you know, how you sell $1 million a week in Target?
Great point. Looking forward to it. All right. Safe travels. See you back in a week.
Thank you. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next time to cut through the noise in CPG, retail, and e-commerce.
And if you enjoyed this episode, then why not share it with a friend? And be sure to subscribe wherever you listen so you don't miss the next one.